This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded February 17th, 2016. Episode 287. Hold the trigger.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Whoa, on the road, traveling.
On the road
traveling.
Again.
Yep, boom, da boom, da boom. I'm in San Francisco. I will be doing a meetup tomorrow, probably by the time this is
It'll
released.
Be over and done.
Yeah,
and dusted,
I think,
won't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yep.
But yeah, just doing my usual thing on the West Coast for a little bit. And,
right.
How about you? What's new with you, man?
Well, you're sucking off the supply frame teat.
Sure, yes. That makes it sound really appealing, by the way.
Well, it's all paid for by them, is it not? You know.
Yeah, it's not like I'm not doing work, man. This is my job.
Yeah, that's your job is just to hang out in hotel rooms. Are you sick of it
yet?
Oh,
yeah, no, you're right. You're right. That's what my job is, to hang out in hotel rooms. Right. No, I love it, man. It's been good. We're working on some cool new things, so we'll see.
Right.
Some tools, hopefully, that I could talk about eventually here.
Excellent.
Software still continues to be weird. I don't really get it, but...
Software is in, like, the online tools.
Yeah, about. Web stuff, yeah.
Web stuff and the parts.io you're talking about.
Right, yes. So, yeah, that's going good. And tomorrow the meetup is actually James, Bald Engineer.
Right.
I think you've seen some of his. He's got tutorials online, and then Natasha, who runs Snap EDA. So that that's one of the footprint. It's supposed to be like a footprint library for a lot of different CAD programs. So, and I've been trying to post the talks. So I just posted a couple of talks from the last time, and you know, it's a good resource.
Excellent. How many people turn up to these things? I think I've seen photos, because you usually tweet photos. Looks like there's, you know, 50 people there or something sometimes.
Yeah, it's about that. Depends on how many people are in the office that day, too. Usually 65.
Right.
We limited it at 65 on the RSVPs,
but
usually 40, 45 show up. So,
got it.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. It's you know, it's always a good time. It's a lot of the same people kind of month to month.
I was
going to
say, is it the same people? Or?
Yeah, but that's actually a nice thing. You know, it's kind of with people, good way to... keep in touch and stuff like that. And
got it.
I highly, highly recommend people do meetups, either throwing their own or attending them. So I think
rub it in.
That was not a veiled thing that encouraging Dave to get off his ass. But no, it's good. It's good to kind of just trade. I always push for. I sent actually an extra reminder this time. You know, bringing. You know, like you and I talk about this a lot too. But just bring whatever you have, even if it's like a.
Yeah,
a board
bring
that didn't
something.
Work
I
out.
Know.
Like
yeah,
just
totally.
Having that in hand.
Still have it in your pocket. You can just whip it out.
Yep.
When in doubt, whip it out.
Different phrase than I would use, but yes, I agree with the sentiment. Definitely bring hardware and use it as a conversation piece. I think that's valid at almost every nerd and even quasi-nerd events. You know, like it's just a
right.
It's a good thing to talk about. It shows what you're passionate about. It shows what you're working on. So I'll have my... That board I mentioned last time, STM32 board I've been working on, finally got that assembled and ready to go. So
you have to hang it around your neck on a gold chain. That's a cool way to do it.
Yeah,
big thick gold chain with a PCB hanging off it.
I am super pissed at myself. Do you do checklists when you do boards?
At one point I did a checklist kind of thing, but no, when I was a PCB, doing it full time, you know, I was actually, that's pretty much all I was doing is PCB design. I was a full time professional. No, you just like it's so routine for you. You don't need a checklist kind of thing. Although you do you do go through a checklist, but you don't have to. Like, you don't have it pinned up on your wall and you go through each step.
But
you know,
that's the thing.
Just...
I feel like it is a good idea. So, like, last time, so this board, I was looking at it and I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? Like, I didn't... So, I remembered the big stuff, right? Like, mounting holes, right? That's a big one that I've been trying to remember every other time. But Like the silly little things, like marking polarities on
your input
power connectors, right? It's just like,
I know. Yep.
Why?
There's so many little ones. Yep.
Yeah, and you know what the really big one is that I always forget for some reason. I had two LEDs on board as indicators for like a USB to serial type thing.
Right.
And then I didn't put an LED, just an indicator LED for power. Like that is such a simple and effective and useful, like or like putting a second one just on a digital output, you know, just as an indicator LED. It's stupid simple, but you know, it can make such a big difference in, oh hey, this thing's on now. Mm-hmm. Why is this on? This shouldn't be on. One of the IO pins is powering the entire part. This isn't right. You know, like it could be like tons of different things there, or you know, I thought this was on. I thought I put power on it, but there's no LED, so obviously something's wrong. You know, just like all these little things that you forget about.
When I have had checklists and I've gone through, I still find they don't pick up everything, because each board has its own unique sort of stuff. You know, like it's your own unique things. And so when I finish a board, I'll just sit there for a day, like, you know, like a professional board, right, at a job. I'll just sit there all day just panning around that board, going in different views. This is where the 3D view is brilliant, right? Because you can see, you know, it's a what you see is what you get. You know, so like, and like, I don't care about the components most of the time. I just, you know, are my silk screens
just wanted
right?
Another
you know,
view.
Yeah. Are there, you know, are the polarity indicators on those connectors? You know, and I'll just spin that board around in 3D view for hours all day, just and picking up little stuff here and there that probably, you know, like if I had to do a checklist for every single issue I've found on every single board. The checklist would be so long it'd become unusable, right? And you just wouldn't want to do it. It's, you know, sometimes
I don't know. I've read about the power of checklists before, right? I mean, like, so I was just on an airplane today. Like pilots, you know, like that's a huge thing for the airlines industry is like checklists are super big, because even when you think you don't need
you've got
there is a power to that just because it's part of the routine.
Yes.
And you know, that's very cultural.
Well,
but
there's
also
a lot on
safety.
The line too, you know.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know. Right. Yeah, you and I pay an extra $10 to get another Oshpark board made. They
crash
into
the plane. Yeah. Right.
I know what you mean though. A lot of it is going to be just kind of learned lessons over time. And I think that having that visual thing of just, you know, the best thing is having it in hand. Obviously when you have it in hand, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot blank, 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 and blank. Right. But having some kind of way to visualize it and see it in a different way before sending it out that's actually a really good point.
Some people just don't like procedures for what insert reason here, you know,
sure.
And that's, you know, and it's fine. I get in moods like that where, you know, I don't want to run through some stupid checklist. I know what I'm doing. Push the go button. Or sometimes you just don't care, you know, too much. Oh, it's near enough. It passed the DRC, right? Good enough, you know. Go.
Yeah, right.
Right. I don't care if I have to respin this sucker, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Although I don't know about the Ultium or anything, but you can generate Gerbers without even checking DRC if you really want to.
I think they might force you into things these days.
But that's another checklist item is like, did I check DRC?
Yeah. Right. Well, I think Altium's going more that way because to release stuff, you know, into the vault or whatever, you know,
later,
you know, but back then that was their aim, was to, you know, like you went through certain steps and this is what you did to check it in. You know, you do your DRC, you generate your Gerbers, and you do whatnot.
Oh, that's
and, you
good.
Know, you bomb.
I mean, it's
and
a procedure type thing,
you know,
right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's kind of shades of checklists, right? It's like, there could be somewhere it's like, oh, no, you have to have like a sign twice kind of, you know, checklist process. That's different than here's the things you should be doing before you could check it in. It's just a reminder. That's probably a better way to do it. So,
and still, even with checklists, it's better if somebody else does it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Because you can mentally skip over it. You know, you can mentally skip over a thing because you're 100% sure it's there, or you see things that aren't there, you know, because they're in your mind. It happens, you know.
Right, and that's effectively what design reviews are as well. But I think that having it as a standardized, here's the things you should be checking, or at least think about checking, that's good to have.
Right.
So, yeah, man. So I forgot it this time. But, yeah, you know, live and learn.
Yeah. So you're using a new CAD package, as in mechanical CAD package, apparently.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were going to talk about that. Yeah, so on the mechanical side, I've been using Fusion 360. Have you ever used that?
No, I have not.
That's the so it's by Autodesk. It was like, so they have a couple. They have Inventor is one of the big ones.
Right.
I actually heard about it from Jesse, who runs Keyboardio. So he and I kind of talked about KiCad a bunch, and then I was asking what he's got this mechanical design, and he actually gave a talk last time that I was here in San Francisco, which I can post. But basically, he was telling me about they were trying to bring up this web-based tool. There's a bunch of they're all kind of, they want you to pay monthly now instead of buying the big site license type of thing. And a lot of them are web-based. So this is actually a web-based tool, kind of like what Altium, what's the one you use, Circuit Maker?
Yeah, Circuit Maker, yep.
Yeah, same kind of thing where it's like you have a application on your computer, but it's still linked into a library online. But, there's...
And it's free, is it?
Well, it's 30 days are free, and then but then they support like startups and small businesses and stuff like that. So it's like, I think like 1 year license is free for startups.
Right.
So Contextual Electronics is...
A startup.
A startup, sure. Yeah. But it's also free for students and stuff like that. So yeah, I know that it is really accessible, and I'm seeing more and more people use it. And actually, there's a really great YouTube channel called NYC CNC. Even though he lives in Ohio now, he started in New York and now he moved back to Zanesville. And he's got some good Fusion Friday stuff. He does, and then the company makes some good stuff too. Good tutorials and
got it.
Yeah, it's...
We were looking at another web-based one called Onshape.
Onshape, yeah. And that was that was another one that was recommended to me. What do you think about it?
Well, David, not me, but David likes it, and he wants to use it. So we're looking at getting a license for that. It's not free, although, I don't even think there's a trial. Well, there might be a trial version, I'm not sure, but it's all web-based. It's entirely web-based. I'm not even sure that a server, you actually run on a server. So
it's like in the browser?
It's in the browser, yeah. And wow. But yeah, David seems to think it's quite good. So we're talking with them at the moment about getting some licenses.
Yeah.
To see if we can use
it. Yeah, I remember
because
reading about
we
them.
We are whores, basically. We will use whoever gives us, whatever package gives us a free license, unless it totally sucks, So.
Yeah.
Like, because
that
not
does
fussy.
Matter.
We have to standardize on something, so,
Yeah. Right, and you want to be able to, you're not going to necessarily be modeling stuff, but you want to be able to view stuff and
manipulate
stuff easily,
I want to be able to use it,
right?
And just maybe make a few mods and do a few videos showing it off or something. Yeah. So I need a license as well, so. Yeah.
Right. And ultimately, that's actually what got me into it. It was like I finished building the 3D printer, and then I realized that I don't know how to design new things.
Right.
I know SketchUp, but I don't know how to. I don't know how to make
complex
shapes.
It's a different ball game. No. Whereas David says, Onshape actually has a lot of the stuff that what's the one he uses? SolidWorks. SolidWorks has, right. So he says, it's got all the powerful manufacturing stuff for. Or if it doesn't have it, they're already planning to add it. It's in their list to add or whatever.
Yep.
And, he seems to like it. So, anyway.
Yeah, no, I remember hearing about that. That one was, they raised like a buttload of money, like $60 million for that thing.
Did
I remember.
They? Okay.
Yeah,
Their people from, former executives from SolidWorks or something. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, that's you were exactly right.
Is it?
Because they started SolidWorks and then they sold it to
Dassault
or however you say it, the French company
Dassault.
That now owns. Yeah. Yeah, so San Francisco sirens.
San Francisco, there you go.
Yeah.
Another mass shooting in America.
Maybe.
Sorry. I had to just
hopefully not. Yeah. But yeah, and then they kind of, I think they got to the point where like they sold it and then they kind of stuck around long enough and then they started working on this web-based one.
Right. Okay. So, I didn't know it was the founders of Sol. I knew it was some executives or something from
SolidWorks. Yeah, I think it was. So, but anyways, they raised a bunch of money and so it's got a lot of hype and I have not tried
it.
Well,
actually, I've got a link here. It's like why we started from scratch in the CAD business. Here we go. John Hershick. I'll send you a link to this.
Cool.
So yes, he looks like he goes through... why they why they restarted the whole thing. Actually, that yeah, it's not that long, so it might be worth a read. There you go. We'll link it in.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I'm not a particularly huge fan of Upvoter, but I do think that I don't want to use it, but I do think that the whole being in the browser kind of thing actually is, in general, the trend that we're going to continue to see on everything, including CAD and everything else, right? You know, like, it's just an inevitability. So,
I suspect so.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Mm. There are a lot of benefits, too. You know, like, different views and stuff like that. You can view it on
And your
tablets
work's always there. You don't have to worry about backing it up and, you know, you can access it from anywhere. It's,
Yeah, well, you know.
That's why, like, I don't know, was it a decade? It might have been a decade ago I moved to Gmail, right? I moved to web-based email. I used to have email servers, you know, on my
Pop3 versus IMAP.
Pop3, right? And all that, you know, all that old school jazz. But then, you know, I moved to the web-based email. It was because I was using so many machines, you know, like in different places. And it just made sense. It was pain in the ass otherwise.
Right.
You know, it's why I'm using Gmail. It's why I'm using Dropbox, you know. Everything's just available from anywhere I work, you know.
Well, I still like the, at least right now, I mean, I like the one where it still locally caches stuff. I mean, and this is, I think that's actually, again, to use circuit maker thing where it's you're still working locally versus being completely tied to the, you know, like, so that every change you do ties into the server. It's like, because then if your connection's slow, then every small change is affected by that. Like, I think about things like Evernote. I use Evernote where it's like, you know, I'm writing it. Obviously, this is just text, but, like, you know, writing something locally on my computer, it saves it, but then it syncs against the cloud stuff. Yeah, that's great. That's the kind of thing that I actually, that's the same thing as Dropbox where it's like, yeah, once you take a quick pause, it's going to start syncing to the server and that kind of stuff. Actually, I think it has, you're right, it has a lot of impact. It can really save your bacon quite a bit. Like we talked about last week with you don't like Git necessarily. You just use Dropbox,
awful.
Right?
It was horrible. Yeah. No, I just use Dropbox. I don't have the need for version control, you know. I know you crap on about it, and I know the benefits of it. I've used it before, so please
argue with me. I'm not going to, at least. Yeah.
It's just, you know.
And that was up until you told me that you were using Dropbox. I think at the bare minimum, I think using Dropbox or some kind of syncing service for your stuff, that's the bare minimum. And if you're doing that, then I think for a lot of CAD type stuff, you're in good shape. Because even in a revision control system with CAD or some kind of visual thing like that, it's all or nothing. It's not like you're going to merge changes. That's really the big difference. Right. Like if you're at the point where you're going to be merging, you know, two people working on code separately, and you're going to be merging into the same project, then you need to have more controlled system.
That's a different game.
But with CAD, it's going to be like you're going to be working on something, and then when you're done, you're like, you hand it off to David, and he's like, okay, no, David's working on it, and it's back to you, that kind of thing. That's more of a Dropbox
thing.
That
was the co-working vision that Altium had. You can have multiple people working on the PCB at once, and they worked on the technology to do it, and it sucked ass. It really did, and it probably always will. You know, to have multiple people laying out a board, it's just
a problem that doesn't really exist, right?
It's a, you know, it's a solution looking for a problem. You know,
yeah,
like technically, it's a very neat solution, right? The way they did it, right? You know, technically, very good, but it wasn't an issue that needed to be solved. Yet they thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and well, of course, you know. They learned that lesson. Yep.
That's right.
Hmm.
Well, so you're having your minion do 3D modeling for you, huh?
Yep.
So what are you guys building? Something new?
We're doing something. Yeah, I should actually send you a... Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. I should send you a little 3D
multimeter
model.
Maven.
I'm working on a couple of projects.
Yeah, cool. A
couple of projects, cool. Several.
So do you think you'll actually... So I mean, we're talking about CAD just as a thing, but like, you know, I don't know if you knew, I was back on my old secondary podcast for a while back, Engineering Commons, and That's where I was talking about this. I was thinking, like, I've talked about this on a podcast before, but it was there that I was talking about 3D modeling and stuff like that. But I was talking about, you know, just cross-disciplinary stuff, right? Obviously, you've been getting more into the business side of things. I've dabbled in that a little bit as well. But, you know, like, it's just my vision of the future is more and more people as the solos. I could just call them solos.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you don't have to be great at this kind of thing. You could still hire an industrial design firm if you're really going crazy, or if you're or mechanical engineer if you want to just make sure the mold's right for plastic and that kind of stuff. But for a lot of things, like, okay, I'm going to be 3D printing a simple case, I can model that. You know, I can just
dimensioning. Can I, but there's a difference between our skills and skill set, right, yours and mine, in 3D CAD, and somebody who actually knows what they're doing. Right.
Oh no, no, no! I don't deny that at all. But I'm just saying that, like, even just being able to dip that first toe in.
Oh yeah, of course.
That's actually pretty important these days. Dimensioning a drawing, that kind of thing.
Here's the difference, though. Right, David has a different mindset to me. Right. See, to him, everything can be custom. Right, everything. Oh, I'll just model that in 3D and I'll go to China. I've got the contacts. I'll get it made, you know, and that scares the crap out of me. You're like, it's like,
well,
everything
you've experienced and you know better.
You know, right. And it's like, yeah, but to him, it's like, you know, that's like everything can be solved that way. And that has its good and its bad points. Right? Because, you know, you can lead down that rabbit hole of, okay, you've got 20 custom parts in this design when you only really needed two, you know, like, you could have used off the shelf. Yeah, you could have used an off-the-shelf case, you know, you just didn't look hard enough, you know, like, or something,
right.
Or it's good enough, you know, like the off-the-shelf case is good enough for the look and feel of the product. You don't have to gild the lily and go completely injection molded and everything else.
And I feel like that kind of stuff is what ends up, so with someone like David, right, obviously he is very, very, very bright and, you know, like, and very ambitious and stuff like that. Ultimately, I feel like that's also part of how far you take it down the line as well. Like, I recall I was really, really interested in making a cable assembly and I couldn't find what I needed. You know, I talked to every vendor I could find and just could not find what I needed in terms of, you know, a pluggable cable solution that I wanted. First off, cables suck in the first place. We know that.
Yeah, of course. It's a given.
And it got halfway, you know, and then got the mechanical designer to make this housing for the cable to plug into and blah, 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 blah. And, like, everything seemed great at, like, the prototype stage. And it's like, yeah, we got prototype shot and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And that was great, too. But then it just got to the point where it was like, okay, but now we need to make it a product. And, like, that's just another step up where, oh, well, now the case doesn't look – it looked good as a prototype, but this isn't good when you're going to be shooting 50,000 injection molded plastic pieces because over time the mold wears and the plastic sags and the, you know, the executive didn't like this little thing. And and then it's like – and then the crazy thing is like – and then the thing we don't talk about on here a lot either is – and then you have to get it certified. Like – and like, holy crap. And we've talked to some guests about this, but like, yeah, you know, getting things like certified and moving outside the norm or taking that on when a finished product might already be certified versus you having to go through and certify it. We've talked about this stuff like FCC testing and similar things before. You know, that is a big deal, and that will make you hate your life for a while. You know, like, that certification just can really, and I think what ultimately it does is it just puts you off from going straight to custom the next time.
All right. Okay.
It's not that it's a bad thing. It's just that everything has a trade-off, and especially
welcome
when
to the
it
world
becomes
of engineering. It's almost by definition what engineering's about,
right?
Is trade-offs. You know. Yeah. Yep. You know, you can't just gild the lily on everything. That's not, you know.
Well, you
That's
should be pounding this into David's head, man. Come on. Do you need to get him on the horn rent? Is he there? Can we shout at him?
No, he's not here. No, he's on holidays. No, sorry.
Yeah, see? That's the thing. So, and then these kids go off on holiday, you know?
Yeah. No, it's, you know. And it's like, you know, even when, you know, NASA, like, went the Apollo project, they went to the moon, right? Even, like, a budget was no...
Right. Money was no object.
Money was no object. Manpower was no object, right? But... there were so many realistic problems that they had to compromise on.
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah. And there's just no choice sometimes. And that's why a lot of, especially like startups and crowdfunded projects and things like that, you know, the wheels will just completely fall off the billy cart. Because, you know, they'll think that they can do this and this, and they can add this and add that, and, and this extra perk, you know, we'll just add this functionality. and then it all falls apart.
Yeah. I was, so at work today, we did like a company hackathon, and actually software people are pretty good at this normally, but like super constraining the problem. Like we all had these crazy ideas and then we're like,
right,
let's just find one example and make that work first. You know, and that's the same kind of thing with a product too. It's like, just get like the bare minimum of the thing working. And then once you do that, and actually I really dislike hackathons. I feel ineffective at them. I don't feel like I want to plan things, but the thing that it's actually really good for is putting you out of your comfort zone and saying, what can I get done today? And what that does is it kind of just strips away all the extraneous crap, and it just gets to the point where it's like, okay, what can I get done?
Just the bare bones. Yeah.
Right. What can I throw away? And that actually that is probably one of the more powerful things about hackathons is just
agreed.
Don't gild the lily, right? It's like you can't and get to the point where the main thing is working first.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that works, then you could start bolting stuff on. If the bolt-ons don't work, then, oh, who cares, right? You still have the thing that works in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah, and the same thing works in hardware, right? It's like, you know, get the board working by itself before you start trying to shove it into a case. You know, it's like...
Just get a board.
Yeah, or get the LED blinking when you jury-rig the wires together, right? I mean, like anything.
Sometimes the circuit will be half finished. We'll order the board. Because we a board. We want a board. And we can build up half the circuit on it. We can fit it into a case. We can play with it. We can hold it. You know, it's not finished, but we send it away, you know, because you're halfway there.
Yeah, Paul. Right? Man, my old boss, one of the best things he taught me where I was just like stressing over this and that. And he's like, just pull the trigger. Like, really. Sometimes you really do. You need to, right? Yeah, and it's just like, accept that you're going to have some screw-ups, and that's part of the problem, especially if you know it's just a prototype, right? If you're going straight to production, first off, you're an idiot. And second off, if that's the case, then, or if you have, maybe that's not the realistic thing, but say you have a really expensive board and you only get one turn or two turns total, that's fine. Maybe you spend a little bit more time there. But if you're doing a cheap proto, just pull the trigger, man. Just accept that some stuff's gonna be broken because you can always bodge wire. Bodge wires are the currency of electronics, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Pull the trigger, folks. And I don't mean that in the American way.
Oh, really? Two references, Dave?
Two references, dude.
Okay.
Well, sorry, whatever. I got bombarded with the Jeb Bush thing.
I don't even.
Next.
Yes. So 3D printing, not 3D printing, 3D modeling. And in general, I think that having those kind of skills, at least in some kind of proficiency in that kind of stuff, really useful. Because at some point, you're going to have to talk to someone about, you know, how tall your capacitors are and interference and that kind of stuff. And it's products are not just circuit boards, you know, like,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like you might see them like that on Kickstarter, but in the real world, people want plastic wrapped around their electronics. So
those pesky customers.
Yeah.
Ruin everything.
Yep.
Oh, dear. So what's this? Speaking of cloud-based rubbish, what's this microchip are now on the cloud? Yay, you can do your pics in the cloud.
Yes. Yay,
I haven't tried. Is it released yet, or are they just announced that they're going to do it?
I think it's just announced, yeah.
All right.
Maybe it's out. That's the thing. I never really got into the pic side of things. I know that you've done that.
Yep, I've done in the past. Many pic projects, yes.
Yeah.
Various
what do people
techniques
like about
start,
it?
Start out. Well, see, the thing is, right? People go, oh, why PIC? Why PIC? Right? Because PIC was the first. There might be fanboys out there who may correct me, but PIC was basically the first you know, easy to get in, cheap to get into microcontroller when they released the PIC16F84. It had flash, in, sorry, the PIC16C84, which had E squared PROM programmable memory. You could reprogram the chip. Wow, without having to get an expensive windowed version that you stick in your EEPROM eraser.
That's right.
Or go UV through light. All these one-time programmables, you know. Yeah. And you could buy these cheap programmers for them. It was, you know, it was one of the first, right? AVR wasn't even around then, right? We're talking, like, I don't even think the company existed, right?
Really?
I don't know about timelines, but, like, it was, like, I don't know. Anyway, definitely Atmel were around, but I don't think like the AVR was around.
Yeah, okay, but the
yeah, I'm sure I'm going to be corrected.
Whatever.
So yeah, but
architecture.
Architecture, okay.
But that was the first one. That was one of the early ones that was accessible. Yes. You're saying just as accessible thing,
as an accessibility thing to your average Joe. That's why PICs took off in the hobbyist magazine world, right? Before the internet, right? Magazine projects that all be using PICs because that was the one you could get. You know, that's the one you can buy readily, you know, before you had online e-commerce and everything else, right? You could get your hands on these. You could get the hands on development tools relatively cheaply, and you could code it in assembler, you know, which is what you did back in the day because C compilers were still sort of a bit, you know, like, oh, yeah, you got to pay $1,000 for a C compiler kind of thing, you know. So I started off in assembler on the PIC, you know, and as did everyone else. But it was that reprogrammability. I don't know if they were the first one, but they were the first one readily available. So that's why, you know, and it's legacy. It's just carried over and over.
Well, that probably made a lot of brand loyalty and stuff like that,
and
too. Like,
a lot of brand loyalty. And and to this day, I think you can still buy almost every original PIC chip, you know.
Nice.
So they had a reputation of not discontinuing them and actually abandoning you as a customer, you know, so...
That kind of thing, like, it, I think invariably too, like, you know, you get people that are doing this as a hobby and then they start working in a company and then they say, well, why not that, right? I mean, like, that's the same kind of thing. You'll see that a lot of places. So yeah, that's good. I remember, obviously you weren't there when I interviewed him, but Voya, when I was in Serbia last time, he was huge in the PIC stuff, and some of the stuff I saw that he did on, like, just simple, I think it was PIC 16 as well. It was just like graphic outputs and all this crazy stuff. It was really fancy. So way beyond my purview.
Got it.
Yeah.
Atmel AVR came out in 1996. There you go.
Really?
Yep. 1996 was their first, I don't know what chip it was, but it was their first, the AVR architecture. First in 96, whereas PIC goes back to the General Instruments chips. PIC stands for Peripheral Interface Controller, and it used to be, I think it's General Instruments used to own them, right, before they became Microchip. And it, like, back then, they were making, you know, these one-time programmable microcontrollers that were used in everything, you know, and so they date back to the 80s, you know, they date back like, you know, a decade or more, you know, way before some of the other newer architectures. So, yep.
I jumped past all that stuff. I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't
no,
do any
you're
of that
too either. Young. You don't remember this stuff.
No,
right?
I mean, but it's I mean, you know, I've done some Arduino stuff, of
right,
course.
Yeah, but you've never done. Yeah, yeah.
I've never done like low level stuff, and now it's just like I'm in the STM32 world. It's like, straight to Cortex. All right, whatever.
You know, there you go. The first General Instruments PICs were in 1976.
Whoa, nice.
Okay, right. Before you were born, sonny boy.
That's right.
It's like, yeah. And that's how old school they are. So there's a lot of brand, a lot of legacy there, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, yep. Although it wasn't the first PIC, but that's the first General Instruments architecture came from there. So, yep.
And now you can program it from the internet. So
right, yay. Progress. That's
Well, no, so we started the show talking about, well, not started the show, but we were talking also about, you know, web-based tools and stuff. Have you evolved your view at all? Obviously, when we were talking about Embed and that started coming out, you know, obviously that's a cloud-based compiler as well. Do you have any Any revisions on that side of things?
I haven't used them, so I can't really comment.
I remember, so I've been, obviously, I immediately devoured Jack Gansel's newsletter as soon as it hits the inbox.
Right.
And if people don't know, you should totally read it, The Embedded Muse. You can sign up on Gansel.com. But it seems like, I remember Jack at the beginning didn't seem like he was super jazzed on it, and then obviously when Elisa and Chris were on here and they did the call-in show with me, they were recommending it as well, and I think it's kind of one of the, I wouldn't say crept in, but it's definitely, I've seen more positive than negative things about it lately, just because of the simplicity, and, you know, it's, and if people don't remember, it's basically you can write in an online IDE, and then it does the compiling, and then it pushes the binary down to you, and you just basically drop it as a file into the USB, you know, it looks like a USB flash drive, and that you drop it into that, and it basically programs the controller. Like, that's pretty cool. I think that's an interesting model. I don't like that it still doesn't have debugging. But otherwise, I mean, like, I think that actually, I mean, overall, I think that is actually a really interesting low friction model to get people into, to get, especially because it's cross platform as well. It's, you know, it's more than just one vendor. So that's kind of interesting too. And, you know, it's very low friction. I do imagine someone coming into the hobby or the field in general and be like, what's debugging then again? But, you know, you can learn that later, you know. Debugging can actually happen with just a single LED, so.
There are debugging fanboys out there. You see it on the, I see it on the forum a lot where, you know, debugging's everything. You must have the ultimate debugging tool that can trace step through, you know, a minefield of, you know, bugs. And, like, you know, they go, oh, the PicKit 3 is garbage because it's a garbage debugger. You've got to have the real ICE, you know, and there's the ICE fanboys who, you know, oh, you have to debug it on the real hardware, you know, none of this in-system serial, you know, debugging protocol rubbish, you know. And there's a lot of...
I mean, it's shades of gray for everything, right? It's not, necessarily going to be...
Like, I've never been a debugger... fanboy. I've never really had the need to, you know, trace step through everything.
If you or I write something and it's bad, we're going to have to start over no matter what.
My code's never been bad enough where I've had to. Yeah, as you said, like, I will just add a little, a couple of lines of code that, like actually blinks a LED or does a serial output or toggles a line, and then I can check it with a scope. And that's, you know, like,
But then again, we're not doing crazy things, right?
No, I mean, we're not debugging 10 million lines of embedded C++.
Right, or if you're, if you're in debugging like a what's that called, where you're writing directly to memory from like an ABC or something. You know, like having just high throughput type calculations, stuff like that.
Would it be direct memory access,
DMA? Yes, thank you. I was like, it's not DRM. DRM's totally different. Don't say DRM. Yes, it's DMA, thank you. But, you know, just like things like that where it's really super high throughput.
Hang on. I just got a date. I have to go back. Sorry. Not as early as I thought. The 16C84 from the PIC from Microchip was 1993. It was a big deal. But once again, it was still like 3 years before AVR was even, you know, a wet dream. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's why it got a lot of brand loyalty. Sorry, back on target. Stay on target.
His computer's off.
Is everything okay, Chris?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm using the force. That's what you're supposed to
say. Use the force. Use the fork, Luke. micros and stuff. We should probably move away from that because I think we pretty much run out of things that we have to say about micros. At least I do. I've run out.
We're done.
Yeah. So.
Really? Oh, that's boring.
What? Not done. Done. We're not like done with the show, are we?
Right. No. I got 20 minutes left. Jeez, that 40 minutes flew by. Sorry, we've just pissed it away.
Yeah, it's about fine. That was good. That was good conversation.
Right, one of your best episodes ever, you think?
Yeah, that's right. Right, we should end it now, just while we're at a high point.
Boy.
Yeah. So, how goes the DMM Enterprise. You are the DMM.
I'm packing and shipping
master
up to the wazoos.
Yeah,
at the moment, I'm sold out. And here's another thing, which you know is an issue. Like I've got my new rebadged Bryman multimeter, right?
Yes.
That I'm selling, and like I haven't really even advertised it yet as such, and it's sold out already. You know, I ordered 200 of these things, and sold out. Well, I've got a few left that I want to send to various people, but basically, you know, public as far as right, right, yeah, all right. Do I get the hint?
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, I'll send you one.
Anyway,
happy. Anyway, yes. We've been like, basically sold out already, right? And like after it leaked online, it accidentally leaked. Actually, I think we spoke about this the other week, did we?
Yeah.
We leaked it. Yeah, you know, right. Yeah, started to sell, and I realized, I'm probably going to sell out of these things. So I contacted them and said, I'd like to order another batch. You know, what's the lead time? 2 months. You know, it'll be April, right, before we can ship you new ones. And then it's go, holy crap, 2 months every time I place an order? Because they basically build them to spec. That's, you know, that's, you know, it's not like they build 110,000 of these things and keep them in stock for you. They, you know, I guess they might have the just-in-time model. You know, who knows?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like a PCB, what do they call it, a supermarket? You ever seen that before?
Right. Or isn't the Dell model, you know, didn't Dell used to make computers to spec for you? You know, as soon as you placed an order, they'd spin it up and they'd manufacture it, you know.
Yeah.
Or something. Or they had all the parts or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, like, yeah. What I mean is I don't think it's supermarket, something like that, though. But it's basically, I've worked in manufacturing places like that where it's like they have a bunch of common pieces, and they would have
they'd build
500 of the common board, and maybe there's 200 of those available, but you're still waiting for 200 of the displays that aren't yet made, that kind of thing. So
got it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they obviously don't like to keep stock, so they basically effectively make them to order. It's hard to get information out. You know, like I guess a lot of it's trade secret. They don't want everyone to know how they do things and why. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's 2 months lead time.
Yeah.
To get another batch, and like I expected, you know, maybe a few weeks. I thought, you know, it's a new model, they'd start churning them out, you know, so it'll be in the pipeline kind of thing. But, you know, no, 2 months, thank you very much. And I'm ordering a big quantity too.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, and...
So I've been doing a bunch of stuff with, like, manufacturing stuff, on software side recently, but... You know, like, you don't really, until you get to a certain point, you don't really think about that stuff because, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm going to buy stuff that's in the marketplace. You know, I can buy stuff on DigiKey or Mouse or whatever. And you don't have to really think about it. But when you do get to a certain level, like you are, right? So you're buying, a couple hundred of something. It's like, no. Lead time is a huge thing that you don't really have to think about. And what people sometimes don't realize, I'm sure some of our listeners understand this, is like, something that is 8 to 12 week lead time, which is, you know, some 8 weeks is 6 to 8 weeks is standard.
Oh, you young whippersnappers have got it easy. 40 weeks when I was a boy.
Yeah, of course, right.
I'm not kidding.
No, I know you are.
Right?
But let me say why that is. If people don't know, that's because they're literally taking new silicon and putting it into a fab like that. So if you want to buy a bunch of new PIC 16s and they don't have them in the marketplace already, and there's none that are...
They've got to slot you
customers.
Into their schedule.
That's right. Yeah, you have to go. You are basically dun 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 dun, and they're basically just churning out new silicon and testing it and packaging it, or cutting it up and packaging it and testing it again. And like, yeah, like that is, like Dave said back in his day, because he's old, and that was more, that was just a capacity thing, right? And if you don't have lots of excess capacity, then you're basically getting in line. And sometimes big customers get to jump the line a little bit. And
Apple
and they
or
get,
somebody comes along and boom, everyone else gets bumped, right?
Right, exactly. So, and it quickly ripples throughout the ecosystem because...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, so now Dave is getting an 8 week lead time on a multimeter. That means that they're probably getting 4 to 6 week lead time on their stuff, right? Then they can build it in a week or two and get the stuff shipped out.
Maybe that's the reason for the delay, is that they're going to order the parts.
I don't think that's a delay, even though. I mean, like, that's just a, like, it's not like there's just bunches of stock in the market. Like, yes, there is stock in the marketplace.
Yep.
But once you get past a certain quantity, it's all about that purple screw, right? Or like on the microcurrent thing, right? You had that one resistor.
That one resistor. That was yeah.
You know, that's just a thing that you have to deal with, and it just ripples through the system really quickly. And I tell you what, you know, like looking at this, I look at this stuff all the time now. There's no way to fix it.
No.
Other than building with complete jelly bean components, which means you're not making anything
exactly, you know, and you can turn it. Yeah, that's right. But in this case, it completely ruins. I hate to use the word my business model, right? But I've got a lot of people asking for this thing. It's popular, and I haven't really even advertised it properly yet.
Lead time makes the heart grow fonder. I think that's how the phrase goes. Just coming off Valentine's Day, I think that's how it goes.
Like, I did this on the forum. I went, what the hell do I do, right? I asked this on the forum. Do I take pre-orders? Do I crowdfund it so I have, you know, like so you have money in the bank, runway. Get the hype and get people up and get the money up front and blah, blah, blah. Do I do this? Do I do that?
You hire a hype man, right? Like rappers do. Like, yo, Dave Jones, gonna have the best DMM ever.
And like, but see, that's the thing, right? I had already planned this week to do a video actually reviewing this meter. Right? And, you know, like, but what's the point? There's no point if I don't have anything to sell. Right? It's stupid. You're
thinking like an engineer, right? Man. You're not thinking fourth dimensionally. Money initially, you know?
Yeah, but no, money. I would get more. No, but I would get more if I wait. I think I would. I think I'm doing the right thing. I'm not going to do a review video until stock's almost there or until I actually have stock to hand. Because, you know, yeah, you'll get X amount of people signing up, right? But then you'll get a lot of people who go, nah, I just don't want to wait.
Yeah.
You know, it's a trade-off. And I think if I did a video now, I just have a lot of pissed off. I've already got a lot of pissed off people. Oh, why can't I buy it? Mm. You know?
Yes, we are a culture that's used to, you know, a lot of stock in the system.
Straight away.
Yeah, that's true.
No, and it's just...
And that's another thing, I think, from a business perspective, too, is that, like, a lot of people don't realize that, okay, you know, someone might say, well, why don't you just build a bunch and sit on them? And it's like, I'm not sure about where you live, but at least where in the U.S., it's like, if you hold inventory, you start getting taxed on inventory. I mean, like, it's like, you don't get to just... There is a cost for overshooting.
Hence the stock take at the end of the year, all that sort of crap.
Sure, exactly. And that's where all that just-in-time stuff comes from as well. It's like you're trying to not only make sure your cash flow is free so that you can build
cash
the next
flow
one.
Cash flow is the number one thing to keep a company afloat is cash flow.
Yeah, right.
And inventory is the arch-enemy of cash flow.
Right.
Stock is the arch-enemy.
So we're going to talk about cash flow. It's not we're turning into a business podcast here. Let's just talk from a practical standpoint.
But no, it's an important thing, considering anyone, any Joe Blogs in their garage can be a manufacturer now.
Yeah.
You know, a seller, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so it's important.
So let's use your example here, though. I don't know your actual numbers, but let's say you're going to go and build 500 multimeters at $50 a piece, right? And it's like $50 a piece being like the cost to actually build it, right?
Yep.
Thinking about the cash flow there, it's like, holy crap, that's what?
$25,000.
That's $25,000. Yeah, it was like, well, is that really right? Yeah, it's $25,000, right? And like that, it doesn't seem like much. But it doesn't seem like much on a per basis. But like, and then that actually ripples through as well because, you know, I think we've talked to someone on the show before too, where like, you know, some distributors will give you credit for some amount, but not necessarily that whole $25,000. It's like that means the rest you gotta cough it up, man.
Well, in this case, I don't have to cough up the money right now, but I've got to cough it up a week or two before they ship.
But I think talking about people that are maybe thinking about their first Kickstarter or thinking about doing a bootstrap type board that they want to, you know, make and sell and that kind of thing. Like, yeah, this is a very practical, like, man.
That's why the pre-sales is so important these days because a lot of people don't have the money to do it.
Right.
You know, they can only do pre-sales. That's the only option. Get the money up front from the customer and then... You know, you can afford to buy all the parts and order the stuff and get them made. you know.
Right.
But
or
in this
just,
case,
you know,
I decided
your
against
house.
That. Right,
you
yeah,
do that too.
You've got to get or get a line of credit. You know, I had PayPal ring me up the other day. They physically rung me on the phone. A human from PayPal,
human being, huh?
Yeah, human being. They actually work there. Apparently,
weird,
unbelievable. Yeah. And they said, you know, have you heard about our credit line, our line of credit? And yes,
pass.
I've heard about it every time I log in. You keep plastering it with me, you know. Yeah. PayPal will give you money, credit now up front based on your sales history.
Right.
And, you know, and stuff like that. And then they'll take out a percentage of your sales when you do actually make the sale.
All it took was David to sign over to Sagan.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, your firstborn son? Oh, right, cool. Yeah, right.
It was only 12%, you know, interest
right,
rate.
Right.
You know, I'd rather pay zero, thank you.
Yeah, right.
But,
no,
you
yeah,
know,
I mean, these are very practical things for people that are thinking about
yep.
making products. And not even if you're not making your own product too, right? I mean, like, if you're... This is what your accountants at your company and your purchasing agents at your company, if you're big enough, this is what they're thinking about too, because there are significant capital outlays to go and build a hardware product. And then the way it gets back to all the designers that are listening is like, man, don't mess it up.
Right.
You know, we might be okay with pulling the trigger on a PCB where you're buying three of them or five of them or 10. don't pull the trigger on the 500 to 1,000 order kind of thing.
Now, I've worked at companies where buying $1 million worth of parts is, you know, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah.
Right? And, you know, that's what you commit to, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and hopefully you're making $10 million on all that whatever pops out, but like
exactly.
Yeah, you
but
kind of have to
massive volumes, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So there you go. So in the end, I decided not to take pre-sale. Well, I did start back orders, so I took a few, but then my shipping systems are. I don't think it's going to work nicely. I'm getting them to change it anyway. So I stopped back orders there, and I've basically just ordered. I've told them, look, yeah, I'll order another X100. Thank you very much, and I'll pay for it out of my own pocket. And, you know, yep, hope I sell them.
I hope
but
so.
It's,
I'm sure
but it's pretty safe because I know the market. I have, you know, I have a decent market to sell into. And, and you know, if the worst happens, you can always sell at cost, you know, as if people wouldn't. You know, buy a multimeter at cost that that sell like hotcakes. You know,
right? Yep.
So, you know, so it's practical. You know, it's impossible to lose your money, almost. You know, so.
Oh, I've been working on ways to lose my money for my whole life, Dave. Come on.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, if you buy something popular like a multimeter, as if you couldn't sell it at wholesale cost.
Oh,
right, of course,
yeah,
of course you could, right?
Right.
People
think,
just whack them on eBay at wholesale cost and they'll fly off the shelves, you know.
Yep,
like,
yep.
So you can always get your money back. So the actual downside risk is practically zero. But the upside risk is, you tie up your cash.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's a big outlay. And
right,
yes,
well, and I think another thing with that is...
It is not thousands of dollars, you know. It's like, you know, it's more than a year's salary for a lot of people. It's crazy, you know. It's like, yeah.
Well, and I think, so we talked about lead times as well, right? And that kind of ties into the cash thing too, because it's like, if you say you didn't think about that one part that has the 20-week lead time.
Yeah.
And you've already bought all the parts.
Or somebody just... I've been gazumped with that before. You know, you get totally gazumped. They were
gazumped.
In stock in DigiKey yesterday, but you went to press the order button today and stock is zero.
Yeah.
12-week lead time.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Like, yep.
Right, but you've already... The difference would be if you had already bought all the other parts, right?
That
kind of thing is...
So you bought all the others, you spent all the money, and you're stuck on one
right, and
bastard part
and
you can't
one
get.
Part, right,
yep.
The purple screw, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Jeez. And the red screw just doesn't cut the mustard.
That's right. Right.
Oh, dear. I do like coloured screws. I do like coloured anodized screws.
Where do you source those from?
Plenty of places. The
the
aluminium anodized socket head screws. Very popular. You can get them in all different... colors. Fantastic.
I mean, to be completely honest here, Dave, I mean, I've always had people that were doing the mechanical stuff for me.
Yeah, I know. No, exactly. You know,
it's, I mean,
no,
I know I've we've talked about it, and we're getting, I'm getting into it, and you're getting into it, and it's like, but like, you know, that is a
These things matter. You know.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
yeah,
I've worked on projects where the external part of, or if there is no case, the PCB is the case, and the mounting screws are visible. You know, it's like, yeah, you're going to use nice socket, not this Phillips bloody garbage. You use nice socket cap heads, right? With you know, hex cap heads, with, you know, and you can get them in multi vibrant colors, in five fruity flavors. You know, like, yeah, it's great. You know, looks are a big thing, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure.
You're not a fanboy.
No, I mean, I just...
You've just never been involved in it, right?
Yeah, I just, I don't... The products I've worked on have always been much bigger than the part that I've worked on. You know what I mean?
Right.
I've never been a significant enough contributor to a big project like that, so...
Got it.
But, yeah, that's... Thinking about that stuff's good. I think that helps to differentiate products and stuff like that, so... That's good. What other links do you want to talk about? Because I have one on here that I want to talk about just because...
Well, go for it, because our hour's up.
It's not quite up, but...
3 minutes.
I think this was Greg Charvat on Facebook shared this. There's a video of a guy that has a jumper cable on a 500 kilowatt or 50 kilowatt AM tower. Did you watch that one?
No, but I want to.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Basically, he pulls... He's shunting current around something using a cable. He pulls the cable off, and then it sparks across the gap. But because it's like, it basically becomes a plasma speaker because that much power is going through it.
Ah, yes. I've done plasma speaker.
You can hear the radio, or the audio rather, that's being pumped out on the radio. And it's just, it's so freaking cool. And it looks so dangerous. This guy's so nonchalant about it. He's just some workman dude. He's like, yeah, whatever.
All right.
That's crazy.
Okay, I'm watching it now.
Yeah.
Yep, he looks like he doesn't really care. Yep.
Like, well, that's the thing. Like, any kind of thing any job most people are in, they get normalized to that stuff, right?
Yeah, oh, no, totally.
You know, like, it's, and that actually is very dangerous, I think, too. You know, getting too comfortable with something like that. That's where habits really are quite important. So having good training up front, that kind of thing. But it is crazy.
Anyway, yep.
What else?
It's like the workers though, who worked on, you know, back on the Empire State Building. You know, you see the photos of them just, you know, out there walking on the, you know, having lunch, just sitting on
having
the beam,
on the
hanging
girder.
Over.
Yep.
You
yep.
know, yeah, like. Maybe that can be the photo for today's.
Yeah.
you become normalized to it, you know?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Ah, boy.
Lots of other stuff about, I've seen more and more stuff about security. I mean, obviously we talked about that, I think two weeks ago.
Boring.
You and I don't really know much about that.
We don't.
Got some feedback that people were interested in hearing about that stuff. Obviously, when we talked to Sarah last week, Sarah was a security researcher. We've had other security researchers on the show, like Michael Osman, stuff like that.
We have.
I think I've mentioned this on the show before. Usually, the stuff that I'm doing is so low level that there's not enough intelligence to really have to require security. But I think that, you know, being part of a larger system, that stuff is actually quite important. There's
got it.
Yeah.
Somebody's got a do-it-yourself optical inspector.
Oh, yeah, that's Bob. Bob Badley. Yeah.
I haven't... if people don't know, this is a more obscure bit of kit on a surface mount production assembly line, which I haven't really seen people do before. I haven't heard much, you know, much murmur about it, really. And basically what it does is when the board comes out of the thermal oven, it goes into an optical... inspection camera. It's just a camera, and it looks down on the board, and then it can identify each part to make sure it's there. It can compare against templates,
and
all
it can
sorts
detect
of stuff.
If there's like a tombstone, you know, so like
or
if you expect to see
tombstoning,
a resistor with two silver bits on the end, and you only see one silver bit, it means it's probably tombstone. That kind of thing, right?
It's probably tombstone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, and it flags these things, and you know, or it can read ID, you know, component ID numbers. Yes,
that's the right part down.
Yeah, that is a 221. You know, ohm resistor, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it can read the part code. You know, it knows if the component's been put in backwards, right? Because the text is upside down, you know? Things like that. And, mm-hmm. yeah, these optical inspection things. So, anyway, which it's not hard. It's just a camera and some smart software.
No, but the software is the important part, right? Of course.
Well, which, Bob's using OpenCV, which is a mm-hmm. ridiculously powerful open source optical visual camera, you know, thingamabob. Mm-hmm. I know
yes,
what I'm talking about.
Camera thingamabob, yeah. That's right, yes.
And, so he's using that to identify parts and things like that. So that's really jazzy.
Yeah, no, I think it's actually really good. And he was one of the early classes of Accelerator, and he's been doing some other interesting things with manufacturing and stuff. And this is actually, I think he writes about how it's on-site. He's doing on-site his own manufacturing as well, and there's some mm-hmm. some posts about why he did that. So I thought it was, it's actually really interesting, interesting stuff. So it's a good use of readily available technology with some software on top. So that's good.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's basically a webcam stuck on an arm, and it looks down onto your product, and you light it up, and mm-hmm. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. No, Bob's the author of the article.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's bad.
What else you got going on this week? Because we should, let's tease for next week.
What have I got going on? Oh, I'm staring at schematic at the moment for my new product, trying to fix it for them. Nice. Telling them do this. No, you can't do that.
Oh,
no,
Dave,
no.
The product
manager. You've got to use this chip. No, right. you've got to watch your grounding on this one. That's important.
Good.
Like
I
actually want to draw them visual. You know, I'm going to mark up the schematic now. It's a big A3 schematic. I'm going to mark it up and go, you know, this ground needs to connect to this point over here because you know it's going to be a problem. And yep.
Yeah, no, I was talking to an engineer recently who was telling me, you know, obviously every company is different. But, you know, like especially as you start working in larger and larger companies, you know, what your focus is around, you know, if you're system design versus, you know, electronics design versus working with a design house or CM or EDS or whatever. And it's really interesting to just hear these different perspectives on it because I've obviously worked in, you know, small to medium-sized companies. But when that gets really big, it kind of more mirrors what you're doing. Not saying you're doing a big thing, but more like having external design teams where your main role is defining the system and then doing review around that system.
Exactly.
It sounded very similar.
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's good. I mean, and that's good. It's I think that probably some of our listeners have a similar kind of work setup and there's a lot of challenges to that as well because you can't micromanage, but you sure as hell want to, I bet.
Oh, yes. No, it's, it makes me want to, it always makes me, like, if I had access to the actual schematic, I'd be making changes, you know. If I had access to the PCB layer, I'd be making changes, you know.
Exactly.
Like, it's almost frustrating that you can't, you know, you got
to
mark things up.
You have to
kind of
trust people,
you know,
but also
you got to trust things, and then you don't get it back for a week because it like you tell them what to do, you know, in this best way as possible, and then you got to cross your fingers that the next schematic they send you is, you know, is fixed, you know, and does what you want, and it's, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise,
so you
know,
be more explicit
it can take time
in your descriptions and more very careful with your wording, stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's. You know, that is definitely a challenge.
You know, like I'm just looking at the schematic here, and right off the bat, I can see that they've added this extra chip in, and, well, the protection circuitry is now in the wrong place. It's got to go on the other side. They didn't, they didn't think about that, but it was bleedingly obvious to me. So, you know, I've got to tell them to fix that. And, you know, so,
cool.
So people will know, a lot of people will know what I'm working on. So, yes, I'm doing real engineering, Christopher J. Gamel.
I'm
thank
very
you very
proud
much.
Of you,
I'm reading data sheets, looking at graphs, and going, "No, we can't use that."
How's it feel? Back in the saddle?
It's good. Yeah. I wish I could do more. It's time, you know.
Exactly.
Somebody asked this on the forum. What if I could do a video on my dream lab? Uh-huh. You know what I'd want in my dream lab, and I thought about it for a second, and I went,
"A DeLorean."
The answer is. The answer is time to work on stuff.
Yeah.
That's my dream lab, where I walk in there and I have an infinite amount of time to work on stuff. Like, it's got nothing to do with the gear, you know.
Right. Well, you've already got all that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I got gear coming out the wazoo, right? It doesn't. Right.
Yeah,
like,
you got more than you figured out. You have time to figure out how to work, right?
And we should mention the big thing, which is being discussed on the forum at the moment.
Sure.
Probably close off on this, is the new Keysight giveaway next month coming up, right?
You giving away, or is this them giving away?
Both.
Okay. Oh, both. Like joint thing?
Have you heard about this?
I saw your video about a giveaway. I didn't know. I saw you said some people on the forum, but some people on the mailing list, that
if
kind of thing.
If you're not on
something.
The fail forum, then you're... Yeah, you won't be in. You won't be in
active
to win
member
it.
On the.
Yeah, active
forum.
Member. So yes,
right,
like as in yes. I don't know the post count yet. Anyway, this is an interesting thing, right? Basically, I'll tell you what's happening in March, because it's public knowledge now. March, Keysight are giving away a scope per day, right? It's the scopeamonth.com or something. And not just any scope. They're giving away their 1 gig 3000X series. One gig, right? 15 grand worth of scope. They're giving one of those away per day, plus giving away a couple of other even bigger things, right? It's like $500,000 giveaway, right? One of those, one gig scope per day, right? Amen. It's like mind blow, right?
Yeah.
So... it's just, you know, it's incredible. And what I negotiated that they would give me two scopes so I could give away to my loyal viewers, right? Which was very nice of them. In return, you know, they want some publicity for the contest, which I'm
they
giving
just
them
got
now.
Some.
We should. The amp hour should have. Damn. The amp hour should have got a scope to give away. It's too late now, I think. Anyway, it's going to have like custom EV. It's going to be special. It's going to have custom EV blog branding. So it's going to have my little face hand on it and stuff. EV blog special edition. Wank, wank. Okay. Who cares? But the interesting thing is, right? I asked on the forum, okay, how can I do this giveaway? And basically, so many people said, like, You can't give away a 1 gig. Nobody is worthy of winning. Seriously, nobody is worthy of winning a 1 gig scope. Who the hell can actually make real productive use of a $15,000 1 gig scope? And I thought about it for a little while, and I thought,
do agree with that?
I came to the same conclusion. So
who? I've been working with my coworker Dan has started. We have a design lab at Supply Frame, and we have like we're building up the lab, and we're talking about what should we have there. And I'm like, you know what? You don't put a 1 gig scope in there. You put in 10 100 megahertz scopes because nobody needs. A couple people that's like Shariar needs 1 gig and above scopes, right? Like people
for
like that
doing
totally
his
do.
Research on his bleeding edge research on 10
yeah.
gig,
but
you know, transmission
it is,
systems.
It
yeah.
is a pyramid. It's like very few people need a 1 gig scope.
Exactly.
My formerly given to me scope has not been used to its full potential, right? I mean, like it's for the once in a while times. Exactly. So I totally agree with that. Doesn't mean people don't want to get it.
Yes, because you like most bloggers, got one of the MDO 3000s, right?
Did.
The 500 meg, right?
Yeah. And the RF card was the more important thing, right?
Of course. I'm giving away like candy. But yeah, how often are you going to use that 500 megahertz, you know, like
not
practically
enough.
Never, right?
Well, I just got mentioned, so I suppose that counts.
I know. It's, and I came to the same conclusion. They're right. Nobody deserves this scope, damn it. You know, and I've got two to give away, and it's like, I think it's too late. I think they're already on the way or something. So it's like,
I don't think it's not a deserved thing. It's just no one actually needs it on a daily basis.
Nobody needs it. So everyone says, oh, sell them. You know, sell them and buy 10 scopes, you know, and then give away 10 scopes. And like... I don't know. It's like I'm stuck between the rock and a hard place. You know, like I totally agree. Like it almost sucks having two 15 grand scopes to give away.
That's a monetary thing.
It sounds
thing,
ridiculous, doesn't it?
I think that the takeaway is like there is a pretty strong consensus there that you know when people like lust after like a high end scope or something like high end equipment like that like. That's a sometimes food, right?
You know?
That is the moose of the that is the Whatever. It's a fancy dessert. You don't need it all the time, right?
No, no.
You want the ice cream sandwich. The ice cream sandwich is the Regal scope, right?
And as you were saying, like, even a hackerspace doesn't really deserve or need one of these, right?
You benefit by having more of a simple thing because most scopes,
usable tool, you know, maybe a 200 meg scope or so, you know, like not a $400 scope. If I had the luxury to sell these things, which technically I do, right, because they're mine legally, then, you know, I'd go out and buy 5 2-grand scopes or something, you know, that's a more, you know,
I guess. I mean, it's all, you know, horses for courses. Is that the right phrase? Is that what you say?
Yeah.
Is that the right phrase here? I don't actually know. I've never known.
Horses for courses. Yeah, you have the right tool for the job, basically.
Sure. Okay. That's what it means.
So horses. What do I do? What do I do? I'm stuck in this position of having to give away these two.
First world problems, Dave.
Yeah, giving away two really scopes expensive. That are worth more than a new car.
How about
sell
the two scopes and donate the money? I don't know, to an educational program. Like,
so, technically, I can do that legally. Keysider giving them to me, they're mine. I can do anything I like with it. But that's bad relations. You know, it's bad public relations for me to go sell them and then go and buy Rigol scopes and give those away. You know, it's like, as much as I want to. You know, as much as I think. You know. Although, like, with hindsight, right, I didn't know that they were actually going to be 1 gig scopes, right? I just said, they didn't tell me. I didn't know the details at the time. Yeah, we'll just give you 2 scopes. And I thought they'd give me, you know, maybe a 5 grand scope if I'm lucky, you know,
right,
kind of thing. But yeah, no, they're like the 1 gig model. Mm. Holy shitballs.
You'll figure it out.
With hindsight, I wanted just to ask, like, because they actually wanted me to promote this thing. And, like, I don't take money for promotion or anything like that. So I said, look, I'll do the promotion. In return, just give me a couple of scopes so I can give them away to my viewers, you know, so my viewers win, right? Mm. So they get something out of it. And with hindsight, I probably should have went, well, just pay me. You know, just give me 10 grand. I'll make a promo video for you and I'll go buy... You know, and then with the 10 grand, I could have, you know, went and bought X scopes. It's a problem that's pissing me off. It shouldn't be, but it is, unfortunately. So I don't know. What would you do?
You're asking me or the crowd?
Audience. Good. I'm crowdfunding the solution.
I don't care.
I'm crowdsourcing.
Yeah,
you'll just laugh from the sidelines.
I don't know. Mm. You'll be fine.
Yep.
I think I think you're doing the right thing. The community matters. It's good that they're, you guys are all talking about it. That's good. Honestly, it really is. So what I'm trying to say is
suffering my jocks.
Join the EEV blog forum. That's a good idea. There is actually, I think there actually is a really, I can't do forums. I can't keep up with them, but I think that obviously you have a very good forum there. So
it's awesome. It's one of the best forums I've ever belong to, although I'm biased.
But, a little bit, but that's okay. I think you get it that one time.
But
cool, man. Well, next week we will either have a guest. I have a guest, robotics guest, lined up at some point. I'm excited about that. Or we do need to do another call-in show. I will be back home. So
yeah,
we'll have one of those.
Only ever done one call-in show.
Really? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two, right?
No, I think I've only done one.
Who was? No.
Was it two? Okay, maybe.
Yeah, no, there was two. We've done three so far. So it was we did the first two, and then I was with Alicia and Chris for the third one. So,
right.
Yeah, we'll do another one though soon, and we'll definitely announce it on the blog and post it in places. When we do that, again, the last two times we've done that, we were going to call you back. If you'd like. If you have a burning question you'd like to ask and you want to call in and leave us a voicemail so that we'll know that you're interested, you can call 929 amp hour at any time.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Why couldn't you get 555 amp hour?
Oh, sorry. It's the area code is not under my
damn it.
Sorry. So 929 amp hour. There's also an 800 number. I can find it here.
Phone 929 amp hour. Sorry, I can't do a radio announcer's voice.
Right. Well, the 827-6255. That's the one I was
referring to. Cool, now we'll be giving away free icy cold cans of Coke.
Sorry.
Yeah, so the toll-free number is 1-855-967-8699. So you can call that from anywhere. You should be able to call on Skype from anywhere and leave us a voicemail. So you can do that at any time. And we'll just, so we'll set up a time to call you back and stuff like that. So you can call us at any time, 929 Amp Hour or 1-855-967-8699. And and that will be for our next call-in show. Not sure if it's going to be next week or the week after, but we love talking to you guys. I really do like the call-in shows. I think they're really fun.
Yep.
I think the timing is always kind of a little weird, but if we really work it out, if we need to, we can split up the times and call different time zones if we really need to. So,
dude, we sound like a real radio show.
Sort of, minus the advertising. someday, maybe. Maybe not. Who cares?
No. We're patron supported. So thank you very much to our patrons. Patreon supporters. Patrons.
There are Patreon patrons. Yeah. Patrons. Yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yes, which we always link in somewhere, or it's on our website if you want to help support the show. Keeps it going, pays the bills, keeps the lights on. Yep. That sort of jazz.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, talk to you next week, I suppose. Good show this week.
Yep. Catch you next time.
See ya.